everyone. Hang on.
Four Midwest Guys presents Star Wars Rebels Recon.
My name is Rex, Captain, 501st Clone Battalion.
I'm not afraid.
That's what worries me.
Lord Vader.
Yes, Master.
The rebels of the Lothal system. Hunt them down.
As you wish. Your master has deceived you into believing you can become a Jedi.
Things are getting worse just as they did back when I was your age. Back then, there were 10,000 Jedi Knights protecting the galaxy. Now,
there's just you and me.
All right, if I tag along?
The more the merrier.
Mission accomplished.
Hello and welcome back to Star Wars Rebels Recon, a Four Midwest Guys Presents production. Today we're going to review the episode of Blood Sisters, which just aired just a few days ago. With me today is my brother Aaron. Aaron, say hey.
Hi.
Hello. How are you, sir? You doing all right?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, man. How are you holding up?
Not too bad, not too bad. Just still kind of waking up. It's still early on a Saturday morning, so. but always eager to talk Star Wars. Just as a note, Mr. Enkenbauer is at his daughter's basketball game again, so he will not be joining us, but he's with us as a Force Ghost. So, so let's get right into it, Aaron. This episode was called Blood Sisters. I guess we got a little bit of backstory on Sabine here, and we're introduced to a new character called Ketsu Ono. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of my favorite scenes was, you know, where we first get introduced to Ketsu Ono. Kind of a cool design, I thought.
Interesting kind of, you know, bounty hunter sort of, you know, armor.
Yeah, she almost reminded me of, like, Firefly. I don't know why. That's what I kept thinking. And, in fact, it's kind of funny because...
Firefly from Gotham?
Yeah, well, not so much. Yeah, a little bit. Like, she kind of looked like a fly to me.
Okay.
I don't know, because of the mask and, like, I don't know, just the way they had her...
Backpack thing set up?
Yeah, her backpack and, like, that, I guess you would call it an axe, I guess she had on the back or whatever it was. Or whatever that was, that she was, whatever her weapon of choice there she was carrying.
It was like a spear or something, wasn't it?
I think it was like some sort of an axe. I don't know, I have to go back and look now. But, and on a side note, I can't remember the actress's name off the top of my head, but, she's actually voiced by the, African-American woman from Firefly. So,
okay.
the series, so.
Oh, okay.
It's an interesting little side note, but yeah, I really like the first time that these two characters kind of meet. It's almost like a showdown at the OK Corral, and they're talking about how they used to be friends, and
it goes into some of the backstory for Sabine, which actually it kind of took a long point for them to actually really have an episode that kind of went into that. Like,
yeah,
the second season, this is really kind of the first episode that kind of does that, really.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, we already knew from season one that she was part of the Imperial Academy. They've been telling us that she used to, you know, she went to the Academy. But what we didn't know, what we found out was, is that she apparently, along with this Ketsu Ono, broke out of the Imperial Academy together.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually bounty hunters for a while, which fits into her Mando armor, I guess, and whatnot, other than her being Mandalorian. And so we get some nice little backstory there, so at least a few pieces that we didn't know before. And apparently, I guess they're their main goal was to join Black Sun, which is like a criminal conglomerate, kind of like the mob almost of other, like another mob, kind of like the Hutts are in Star Wars. So,
Well, I mean, if you go back to Clone Wars, like you see that there is quite a few large, like criminal organizations, like within the Star Wars universe. So,
yeah. In fact, we see, Clone Wars, they do show the Black Sun. Actually, they're kind of like, yeah, they do in the season five part of the whole Darth Maul. They make an appearance. They almost look kind of like big giant. I don't know, like alien versions of samurai, like almost, I guess, like kind of have like that kind of a feel to them. Or actually, you know what they did remind me of now that I think about it is, what was you might know this better than me, Aaron, because you used to play the game a lot. Mortal Kombat, the guy that had four hands.
Goro,
yeah. Like in face, like their facial features. Mm. They kind of look like Goro, so kind of big, stocky.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're kind of like the mob, like another mob or criminal element in the Star Wars universe. So that was kind of an interesting thing. I didn't think that Sabine, you know, had such dark aspirations. I don't know.
Well, she always does enjoy blowing things up, and it kind of works for her in a certain way, and that it kind of fits her background a bit, or what little we know of her.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I mean, It was just a little bit surprising, I guess, for me. I was like, okay, so she does have a little bit more of a darker darker past to her, a darker element.
I think it's kind of nice, actually, that it, when we're talking about like the more criminal elements of the show or like the Star Wars universe, it doesn't normally expand on it too heavily outside of, you know, a few references in Clone Wars or, you know, maybe a few things here or there. But it's kind of nice that it's kind of filling in, like, the mythology a bit.
Mm. Yeah, it does. It definitely adds a nice element to her character, and it does explain a lot. You're right with her obsession with blowing things up.
And both the new character Ketsu also does leave like graffiti tags, something they both apparently have in common.
Yeah, apparently they're both kind of artists, and it's kind of like their calling cards. Like she recognizes Ketsu's, you know, calling card before
tag,
before she runs into her in the hangar. So yeah, kind of interesting. You know, I don't know. So it wasn't a lot of backstory, but it was enough, I thought, for now. You know,
I think they kind of go into Ketsu's story a bit, but they kind of still leave her a bit more or less one dimensional. Like it was a very short introduction. And it didn't really flesh her out. It kind of leaves room for going into it more later, I think.
Yeah, and you know, we always talk about this. I think it goes back to the whole 21, 22-minute thing, whatever it, you know, they only have so much time to tell a story. But
well,
I think
you also have that interesting aspect that Disney more or less has made the argument that the show is kind of canon, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
So, I mean, it's always interesting when they kind of introduce a new character in that sort of setup.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I actually kind of thought she was going to turn, like on him and, you know, kind of leave him stranded or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of surprising to see them keep
her. It's kind of interesting to see, like, by the end of the episode, she almost seems almost sympathetic to, like, the whole rebel movement sort of thing.
Yeah, it was, you know, there's a couple other scenes in that, you know, we'll probably get to, you know, but it's, I don't know if it's, you know, where we, what was I going to say, where, you know, she makes decisions to, the droids kind of push her along, but to save Sabine's life later on in the episode. So she's a little reluctant, but she wasn't as super reluctant. Like, you can tell they're still wannabe friends, I guess. Maybe they don't completely trust each other, I don't know.
Yeah, but, and I mean, by the time you get towards the end of the episode, it almost ends on a, you know, kind of friendly rivalry sort of, you know.
Yeah. Situation. Like, she's actually considering joining the Rebellion. By the end. Which is kind of cool. We could always use another Mandalorian, I guess, in the show. I don't know.
Or it was actually pretty interesting too, especially by the time you actually like remove the helmet and you have like more of the facial features and like the, I guess it's either paint or like a tattoo or whatever.
Yeah, on like the back of her head, and yeah. She has that, I guess you could say, like a slight mohawk going on, bald. So kind of like a, you can tell she's a badass, I guess.
Yeah, it definitely has like an old, like, school, like, RPG warrior kind of character design. It's interesting, and it works for really well.
Yeah, I actually, in some ways, like her design better than I did do Sabine's. I like the old Mandalorian helmet because it reminds me of Boba Fett. But
yeah.
I mean, but Ketsu's armor is definitely cooler looking, in my opinion. I don't know. She has that. It's kind of a mix between some sort of a bounty hunter's outfit with. In some ways, it reminds me of the X-wing pilot's outfit, like the front part.
Yeah.
You know, with like the respirator or whatever on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. There was also a little bit of comedy in there. I think that was one of your favorite scenes, wasn't it, Aaron?
Oh, well, there's a few bits that I found kind of amusing. There's a bit where Sabine is telling Ketsu that Chopper isn't just a droid, that, you know, he's a friend, he's ally, that he's more than that. And then a few, you know, scenes later, you more or less have her waking up this droid pilot. He's more or less just doing his job and trying to, you know, protect his ship.
Yeah.
And pretty much gives him enough time to freak out that the, you know, Empire's, you know, about to attack him, and then realize there's explosives right before they blow up. And he's like, oh, there's explosives. And boom.
Boom. He's gone.
Yeah. It's a fun little contrast, you know, between, you know, well, Chopper's a droid, but he's an ally and a friend, and, well, that guy was doing his job, but F that droid.
But yeah, he's just a stupid automated pilot, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's actually also voiced by Paul Reubens, by the way, a.k.a. Pee-wee Herman, just as a...
I hadn't noticed that.
Yeah. So, because just as an interesting side note, you know, they have that Star Tours ride at Disney. Well,
no.
It's kind of like a motion sensor ride.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually have like a little robot in there. And that's where they got the inspiration for that character, that robot. Yeah, it's almost the same. It is the same thing.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so. And Paul Reubens voiced that at Disney, so they brought him back to do it in Rebels. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of an interesting little tidbit.
Yeah. So. But, not to cut you off, though, what were you going to say?
I don't even remember, to be honest.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree with you. It was kind of a contrast. It's like, yeah, you're just a dumb droid, but I like.
Droids are like a weird second-class sort of citizen in the Star Wars universe. Like, they have what you would consider like an artificial intelligence. Like, they're cognizant, self-aware, but they're still kind of slave class, more or less.
Yeah, actually, very much so, yeah. They are just a tool most of the time, unless it's R2-D2 or Chopper or C-3PO, right?
Yeah. Like, there's certain characters where they're, you know, kind of, you know, given a bit more room to kind of move around, but that's only because their owners more or less allow it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, they're definitely, they've yet to have an episode where you see, you know, droids are taking over kind of thing. I mean, even in the Clone Wars, it was, you know, they're just battle droids, right?
Yeah.
You know.
No, it's interesting because you do see that sort of, like, well, with Chopper or R2-D2 in particular, you do see that they are somewhat aware of their situations. They have opinions and moods and all that sort of thing. Like, they're that level of intelligent to where, you know, borderlines on human intelligence.
Yeah.
And at the same time, just completely, you know, slaves, more or less.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't had an episode where they, you know, go to like a droid planet or something, and you know, that's kind of the theme or something. But yeah, in the Star Wars universe, they're definitely just tools, really. And you know, and the most human are R2-D2 and Chopper and C-3PO. Yeah, and that's pretty much it. That's about as human as they get, and it's about as much leeway as they get.
Yeah,
but. I don't know. In the original Star Wars, it was always R2 and C-3PO were kind of the bumbling fools in a way, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
Not that R2 is a fool, but C-3PO kind of is.
Yeah, despite, you know, random intelligences on, like, language and such, he's never really
yeah,
cast as being a particularly serious character.
Yeah, well, he's the comic relief, aka the pacifist almost, you know, the ultimate pacifist, you know, the coward almost.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, and they're just kind of there just to kind of, I don't know, guide you through the movies almost. They're like the constant almost, but
mm.
But we're getting a little off topic, but it is kind of, it's an interesting contrast. That's a good point. One I hadn't thought about until you brought it up. So yeah, she's kind of a little two-sided there when it comes to droids, I guess. So,
I mean, like you said, in the Star Wars universe, they are pretty much, you know, just tools. So,
right. Really,
unless you have, you know, one that you're familiar with that you've kind of bonded with like a pet, I guess, it's, you know, you probably don't really aren't that attached.
Yeah, they are kind of like pets. That's a good point, yeah. I mean, they definitely, that's probably how they view Chopper and R2, kind of. You know, like I brought up before, they say if R2 is a dog, then Chopper's definitely a cat.
So,
good.
The interesting thing is, like, even in this episode, like, you see Chopper actually be far more useful than, you know, they've shown him before, whereas, like, he pretty much is blasted out of, like, their, you know, ship that they hijacked,
mm-hmm.
and more or less flies through space onto, like, Ketsu's ship to disarm, like, her weapon system.
Yeah, he's very clever at that, and you know, he's kind of doing it all on his own. There's no guidance. Yeah.
Yeah, just decided like, oh, well, that's a good plan for this scenario. Thought it through, and did it before, you know, Sabine even, you know, realized it, more or less, or initiated it anyway.
Yeah, like R2-D2, he's kind of there to save the day and, you know, occasionally and be very useful in that way. And I don't know if that's just with those two particular astromechs or if astromechs in general are supposed to be intuitive because they're mechanics and stuff like that. I don't know. But yeah, it's interesting to be sure. And especially since, you know, Chopper's kind of like a scrap version of R2-D2. He doesn't have exactly all the extra.
Yeah, he kind of looks like he's kind of put together from parts here or there.
Yeah, like a spare part. Like, you know, R2-D2 has, it's kind of weird, brings up the probe, you know, for he's only gotten, you know, to access the computer terminals, and Chopper's just kind of using his robotic arm to do the same thing.
Yeah, and it actually does show R2-D2 by the end of the episode, doesn't it?
It does, actually, yeah. There's like a little brief...
like a little cameo appearance, almost. Well,
yeah, at the end when they drop off the intelligence droid, or the walking garbage can, as I like to call it, from, which is a throwback to A New Hope. We saw that in A New Hope, literally the walking garbage can robot, EG, whatever, 86 or anyway, they called him EG, but yeah, so nice little homage back to the original trilogy.
Yeah. So we actually really good at kind of throwing like little things back to like either the original trilogy or Clone Wars. Like, it can throw them in really subtly and, you know, pretty well.
Yeah. And they actually kind of gave it a use, like a lot of people always made fun of that droid because he is just kind of a walking garbage can. And in this episode, you finally get to see him. He's almost undercover droid. Like, you don't know he's a droid until they sat on him.
Yeah.
And then he got up and started walking, so.
Yeah, but even then, I mean, it's still a universe that is trash. It serves a function.
It does. It was just nice to give that thing a purpose.
But,
you know. Because really, what else would you do with a walking garbage can? But, yeah. Chopper's very uses his skills and you know, it's really saves Sabine, because Katsu at that point was gonna fire on her. In fact, they show her, you know, clicking the fire on the on her joystick there. So, yeah.
Which is kind of an interesting contrast, because she does, you know, kind of save her later on, and Sabine almost seems willing to, well, actually does more or less forgive her for it.
Yeah, you know, at the end she kind of says, well, I'm going to give you a second chance, like they gave me a second chance, so, and she's very accepting of that, obviously. So it's just, it's interesting because she's on the fence, both of them are on the fence, except Sabine leans to the good side, and it seems like Katsu still leans the other way.
Yeah.
Or towards the, you know, dark side, I guess. Not like a Jedi, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's leading towards her own self-interest.
Yeah, exactly. And
kind of similar to, you know, how the pirates exist in the universe and, like, other more rogue-like characters.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the difference between her and, say, like, Hondo is obviously her and Sabine were blood sisters or whatever, you know, or like sisters, and they keep saying that throughout the whole thing. And so there's definitely that whole story which weighs on her and the both of them, really. And but like I said, Katsu still kind of leans, I think, at least at the beginning, before she saves Sabine, is kind of still leaning towards herself.
Yeah.
It definitely shows there. But like you said, by the end of the episode, she's leaning more towards, you know, back to Sabine's side of the same way of things. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
It's definitely a character I'd like to see them flesh out a bit more. Or, you know, at least I hope to see the character kind of come up in here either sometime this season or in the next one at some point.
Oh, yeah. I know just from the previews for season two, they have like a trailer that there's at least another scene where Sabine is challenging. She's like in I don't know if she's on Mandalore, but she's with other Mandalorians, and she's demanding the right of trial by combat or whatever. So, so I don't know if she'll show up there. Maybe, hopefully, you know, and. You know, maybe she's the catalyst for that. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, I think we're just getting kind of like the last episode with Hera. We're just kind of getting a small taste of the backstory. And I don't know if that... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, this season of Rebels is actually really focused a lot on, like, the smaller, like, kind of character development sort of episodes. And... it's been kind of a nice change seeing some of the backstory for, like, some of the more, you know, main cast that you really didn't know much about.
Yeah, it's kind of like we said last week. It's nice to take a break from the main storyline and flush them out, you know, because other than Ezra and maybe Kanan, there's not much interest in the other characters yet.
Yeah, it really hasn't developed them, you know, too heavily.
Yeah, so, you know, and I'm hoping that this small taste of their backstory is just... so that when we get to future episodes, we already know the basics, and then they've got that full 21, 22 minutes to tell the rest. I'm hoping that's why they're doing it the way they're doing it. You know? So, because if this had been a longer episode, I think we could have gotten a little bit more, not only the backstory, but we could have fleshed out Katsu a little bit with her, you know, her struggles. You know what I mean? Because it does happen rather quickly, but... Again, I think it's just a time constraint issue.
Yeah. It definitely plays a role with certain episodes like this one.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, it was pretty good. So, all right. Well, I think we fleshed out the episode pretty well. It's just time for final thoughts. All right, Aaron, I will let you go first on your final thoughts / grade of the episode.
I thought it was about a C+. It's, like I said, it's great to have another, you know, character episode for a crew member we really don't know that much about outside of, you know, a few bits of information here or there.
Yep.
But I thought the pacing was kind of slow, and you really don't flesh out Katsu much, and so the introduction for her was kind of short, and, like, it left her kind of one-dimensional still.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. You know, I actually gave it a B+. I thought we finally get some backstory with Sabine. I know the action wasn't intense and there wasn't a whole lot happening. It was kind of very quick. I think, again, we keep saying it, you know, it's just a time constraint. They only have 21 to 22 minutes to tell the story. But so it was just kind of like a really quick adventure, right? And they just... kind of end up in space battling each other slightly, and then they're brought together because they have to fight the Empire several times, you know. And then she, you know, at the end, she ends up, you know, helping them out. So, yeah, it was really really quick from that perspective. But other than that, I enjoyed, obviously, you know, more backstory. Finally get to understand where Sabine comes from, where just a little bit of a taste of who she is and where she might be. And actually, you know, more questions there kind of arise too, kind of deepens your wanting to know more, kind of leaves you wanting to know more about who she is and where she comes from. You know, if we always knew she was part of the Academy, but now it sounds like she was kind of trying to be a wannabe bounty hunter, or was a bounty hunter for a while. So could be interesting to see where that kind of leads and where that's going to take us in the future. So, it was not a bad episode, not a bad episode at all. So, hopefully we'll get to see more here in the future. All right. And anything else you want to add to that, Aaron? Or?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. So where can you find us? You can find 4 Midwest Guys on Facebook, on facebook.com/4MidwestGuys. You can reach us at Twitter @4MidwestGuys. And you can reach us via email, thenumber4MidwestGuys@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We're always looking for feedback. We're trying new things all the time. We just had a What If podcast. Which was a little bit of an experiment. We'd love to get some feedback on that, as well as our Rebels episodes here, Rebels Recon, and anything else that you might want to get. You know, we're always trying new things, but we need feedback. We can only grade ourselves so far, so please reach out to us and let us know what you're thinking. All right. Well, Aaron, thanks for joining me today, sir.
Not a problem.
All right. And for B. Willie, that's me. May the Force be with you.